And another thing is, hate to disappoint you guys, but we're not going to do Isaiah today. And no, we're not. And I'll tell you why here in just a second. But I will say this. I did start a Bible study years ago in the book of Isaiah. And Sally will remember that, okay? Sally, maybe she doesn't.
How many years?
We did these Wednesday night Bible studies, and we had a group of about 8 or 10 people. And when we did it then, I think the only people that showed up was me and Angie and Sally and Jim. Did you ever go, Stephanie? Okay. And it didn't take them very long to realize I was totally incapable of teaching the book of Isaiah. And so it only lasted a few weeks, and then I said, I could see Jim chuckling under his throat. I'm sure he was on the way home. He was telling Sally, that guy can't teach this. And so and he was right. And so so I decided to, I'm still not ready to do it. No, it's been a long time, and I studied a lot, and I do want to get into it. But as I was getting ready to start, in fact, I wrote down a whole bunch of notes on Isaiah, and I was getting ready to do it. But I noticed on this chart right here that Isaiah was a prophet at the same time that Micah was a prophet and Hosea was a prophet, okay? And so I studied Hosea quite a bit and learned that. And so I figured, well, I think I'd rather do Micah before. And so I read through the book of Micah and I said, oh, man, that's a sort of not a shortened version of Isaiah, but it's an interesting version there because it sets up a pattern that we'll see in the book of Isaiah. We go in there. And so I want to go through the book of Micah today. We're going to start. We're not going to get all the way through it. But hopefully we can get through it pretty quick. And I'm going to move pretty quick through it because I don't want to take and dwell in this too awful much. And one other reason I wanted to do this is because I didn't really want to start in the book of Isaiah until Denise got back. I'm sure she would be very interested in doing this as well. And if you miss the beginning of Isaiah, you're going to miss a lot of it. But we're going to cover a lot of the background that's going to be the same for the book of Isaiah, and we'll go over that a little bit too. Also, I'm recording this, and I'm going to take and make sure that I get it on the website as well as my notes. I'll put my notes on the website. It won't be a written-out study. What's that? Yes, I did turn myself on. I've been turned on for a long time. It's about 71 years now, and I've been turned on. And so we're still cooking along here. Oh, I didn't turn my water on, though, so let me go get that. It's boiling hot, huh? All righty. My parents tried to turn me off a few times, but they didn't succeed. All right, so let's go into the book of Micah. It's called a minor prophet, but it's not too minor at all. As we'll see here as we get into it. Let me see, where is it here? Where did you show up, Micah? Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk. Okay. All right, so Micah right here. We're going to start in verse 1. And basically, yeah, we're going to start in verse 1. And that's all we're going to cover probably the rest of the day. Now, okay, the word of the Lord came to Micah of Moresheth in the days of Joham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah, who he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. So from that, we get a lot of information. So this prophecy applies to who? Israel and Judah, all right? And a lot of the minor prophets don't apply to the northern tribes, but this one here does, and you can see why. Because it's right there during the times of these kings before the Babylonian the captivity took place of the northern tribes by Tiglath-Pileser, I think that's what it was. No, Sargon or Shalmaneser. That's what I was looking. The name I was looking at, Shalmaneser, in 718, about right under the 710. And so, this is basically the time that this took place, and it spans the reigns of these kings, and you can see it right there. Jotham, who was the son of Uzziah, And Uzziah was a good king. And this is important to understand because it helps you to understand what Micah is saying here. So Jotham and Uzziah, his father, were good kings, but during the reign of Jotham, God allowed a couple of things to happen, and that was that Pekah, you see, he was, is Pekah showing up there? Yeah, Pekah. He allowed Pekah and Syria to get together, the king of Syria, who at that time was Rezin, and God allowed them to attack Judah. So there is a war there between Israel and Judah. The next king of Israel, or Judah, was, right down here, here on the bottom, was Ahaz. Ahaz was a very bad king. He brought idolatry into Judah. He was attacked by Rezin, the king of Syria, we talked about that, and taken captive to Damascus. So Ahaz, his reign was rather short there. You can see it's, about 15 years total. And part of that as a regent with his father, Joham. So these are kings of Judah. And it's interesting because when the northern tribes there under Pekah attacked during Ahaz's reign, the northern tribes came down and they took a lot of Jewish people back to the north. They captured a lot of Jewish people and carried them back to the north. And it's an interesting story there, and many believe that this story, that this event actually inspired Yeshua to give the quote-unquote parable of the Good Samaritan, because they believe that the Good Samaritans being spoken of that period of time were the northern tribes. Because what happened during that time, they took those all those Jewish captives back up north, and basically when they captured them, they basically didn't even have clothes on. And so they were taken back to Samaria, and on the way there they were told by a prophet, doesn't define the prophet, but they were told by a prophet that what they were doing was wrong by capturing and enslaving their own brothers. And so the northern tribes, then the people from the northern tribes who captured them, repented, and they bought clothes for all of these people, fed all these people, and took them back down and restored them back to Judea. So basically the story of the Good Samaritan. So many people believe that is what was the inspiration for that story. And it says of that period of time of Ahaz, it says, "For Yahweh brought Yehuda low because of Ahaz, king of Israel, for he had encouraged moral decline in Judah and had been continually unfaithful to Yahweh." So this is the period, and we talk about, and then as we study the northern tribes, we realize they went deeply into idolatry. Surprise, surprise, the southern tribes did too. But the moral decline in Judah was such that God inspired the northern tribes to go down and capture the southern tribes, people from the southern tribes. So a lot of people dismiss that story, but it's very clear in the scriptures, 2 Chronicles 28, by the way. Okay, but later on in Ahaz's reign is when God allowed the northern tribes to be taken captive by Shalmaneser. So the northern tribes became slaves to, or not slaves, but they became captives to the Assyrians and were carried away. And we'll read about possibly some of that in what we see here, not today, but maybe the next time down when we get into the study. Okay, and then the other king that was king during the time of Micah was Hezekiah, and we all know Hezekiah was a good king. Hezekiah tried to undo the damage done by Ahaz, his father. We know that he restored the Torah, the festivals. He also reached out to the Israelites who had escaped being taken captive by Assyria, And we see this in 2 Chronicles chapter 30, verse 5, where it says, so they resolved, this is speaking of the north tribes, so they resolved to make a proclamation throughout all Israel. This is actually Hezekiah making a proclamation to the northern tribes. They resolved to make a proclamation throughout all Israel from Beersheba to Dan that they should come keep the Passover to Yahweh, God of Israel, since they had not done it for a long time in the prescribed manner. Then the runners went all through Israel and Judah with letters from the king and its leaders and spoke according to the command of the king. Children of Israel, return to Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Then he will return to the remnant of you who have escaped from the hand of the kings of Assyria. That was the end of the thing. I forgot to put a carriage turn in here. So this is all about what's happened during that period of time when we see the latter part of Micah's history there. In regards to Hosea, he is trying to restore Israel. And at that time, those people up there became, well, they weren't referred to then, but later on they were referred to as Samaritans. They were the ones from the northern tribes who had escaped the being captured by the Assyrians and stayed there. And some of them came to the southern tribes and kept the Passover, and some of them stayed down there in Judea and became what we would today call, or would have called by the time of the first century, I believe, Samaritans. So we see that there in that. Okay, so Micah is quoted in the New Testament in Matthew 2, verse 6, and in Luke 12:53 in regards to the birth of the Messiah. And we won't be reading that portion today, but we'll get to it here as we go on. Now, another thing, another thing we see also is that the stories in the book of Micah, we'll see this, is that Micah makes a dire prophecy and then follows it by how God is going to restore. And then he'll do another dire prophecy and follow that by how God is going to restore. So it's not a total, we're going to get rid of you and you're all going to be dead and all that. He talks about some very bad things that's going to happen, but then he follows it right up immediately with how God is going to restore his people. And this is sort of a pattern we see. We see that in Deuteronomy. When God talks about through Moses about the destruction that's going to come upon Israel and Judah if they don't follow him, and the scattering of the people, but then he says, "But when you come to your senses, then I'm going to draw you back." So this is a pattern we see quite a bit throughout the prophets as well of this returning back to God. Okay. So let's start here, pick it up again. Let me see, did I miss something? Yeah, so let's pick it up here in verse 2 of Micah, where it says, "Hear all you peoples, listen, O earth, and all that is in it. Let the Lord God be a witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, the Lord is coming out of his place. He will come down and tread on the high places of the earth. The mountains will melt under him, and the valleys will split like wax before the fire, like waters poured down a steep place." So he's getting ready to do some pretty rough things. He's going to come down, and he's going to take and begin to straighten some things up there in Israel and in Judea and try to get these people to come back to walking God. And as we see these prophecies, we'll see that you'll realize a lot of these prophecies were fulfilled before, and they're prophesied to happen again. So there's a lot of dual prophecies in the book of Micah that we're going to see as we go along. So the punishment for Israel is what it's always been. I'm going to scatter you amongst the nations. It's not that you're not going to be Hebrews anymore. It's just that you're not going to be a Hebrew people, you know, as a nation like you were before. Okay, so going on down then to verse 5. All this is the transgression of Jacob and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? Therefore, I will make Samaria a heap of ruins and a field, places for planting a vineyard. I will pour down her stones into the valley, and I will uncover her foundations. All her carved images will be beaten to pieces, and all her pay as a harlot shall be burned with the fire. All her idols will lay desolate, for she gathered it from the pay of the harlot. And they shall return to pay, return to the pay of a harlot. So, you know, I was talking to Angie about this the other day. How many of us have read the Bible through one time, one end to the other? How many of us have done it two times? How many have done it in three times, four times, five times, six times, 15 times? Okay, how many of you have faced a challenge to read it all in one year and done it? Okay, I would dare say if you have read the Bible in one year, you've missed about 75 to 80% of it. Okay, so, you know, we focus on reading the Bible a lot, but do we really focus on studying the Bible as we go along? And this is the problem that many people have in their religion, and they think that, well, I'm a good person because I've read the Bible 30 times. Okay, and I got a friend, and some of you won't know him, so I'm not going to say it. But he always talks to me about how many times he's read the Bible. But you know, just reading it doesn't do any good if you're not studying it. Okay, and there's a lot of stuff in here, like in the book of Micah, that if you don't slow down, you're going to miss about 90% of it. So I tried to slow down a little bit and read some of this. So let's find out what this is about here, because this is really the beginning of the prophecy. Okay, all this is for the transgression of Jacob, for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? So what does that mean? Well, point is that what God is telling them is that the transgression of Jacob is the idol worship that was centered in Samaria. It's because Samaria is an area, but it's also the capital city of the area called Samaria. Okay? So there's a lot of people there. I mean, so this is, he's saying that, you know, the idolatry was wrapped up there in Samaria. And then he goes on and says, and where are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? Okay, so is Jerusalem itself a high place? Well, yeah, it is. It's a high place because it's on top of a hill. But it's not the highest place because the Mount of Olives is higher. But the point is that in Jerusalem is where became the capital of pagan worship in the days of the kings of Israel. It started with this guy called Solomon. And Solomon began to bring the pagan worship in, and the other kings that followed him just went along with that. So God says in verse 6, therefore I will make Samaria a heap of ruins and a field, places for planting a vineyard. In other words, the city is not going to be there anymore. He's going to tear it all down. And we know that did happen in 70 AD, beginning in the 70 AD, when the temple began to be destroyed. Verse 7, all her carved images will be beaten to pieces, and all her pay as a harlot shall be burned with the fire. What that's talking about there is that these high places were built and financed by temple prostitution. So, you know, these things, I mean, Solomon probably paid for a lot of it when he was doing it because he was doing it to satisfy his wives. But for these others, this had to be taken and financed. You had, you know, to build a temple is not a cheap thing to do. And so these were all, you know, various little temples, pagan temples all through Judea as well as Samaria. And they were financed by temple prostitution. That's why it says in at the end of verse 7, for she gathered it from the pay of a harlot, and they shall return to the pay of a harlot, basically stating it's going to be destroyed. So this is what God is going to do. He's going to destroy all these things. In Leviticus 26, God states that the high places would be a major reason for scattering Israel. The building of high places. You know, the high places is not an elevation necessarily. It's a place of worship to the higher beings up there, you know. So that's what it's all about. And again, in Deuteronomy, it says, same thing in verse 33:29, chapter 33:29. Once they enter the land, Israel was supposed to destroy all the high places of the Canaanites. That's my comments. So the high places were very common in Israel, especially during the times of the kings. We see that in 1 Kings 3, verse 2, which basically started with the reign of Solomon. It intensified in 1 Kings 12, 31 with the reigning of Jeroboam in the northern tribes, and then under Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, in the southern tribes. And even during some of the good kings, 1 Kings 15, 14, I forget the king's name there, but during that king's reign, there was high places. I mean, Solomon never got rid of them. Most of these kings never messed with the high places. Why? Because I would dare say the majority of the people were worshiping at the high places. So it's a political thing, huh?
They wanted the Somalis to elect.
That's right. I was going to say that. And so and that's a good point. So, yeah, they it's politics. It's all politics. So they never got rid of the high places. Even Jotham, who was considered a good king, didn't get rid of the high places. And this was during the days of Micah's prophecy. So the high places remained. This worship of pagan gods was continued through Israel and in Judah all during this period of time. Okay, so let's go on down to verse 8 of Micah chapter 1. Therefore I will wail and howl. I will go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like the jackals, and a mourning like ostriches. For her wounds are incurable. For it has come to Judah. It has come to the gate of my people, to Jerusalem. So God is basically saying, you know, what can I do, you know? I've done everything for these people, and they're still going to the high places, okay? And, you know, going to the high places and worshiping at the high places is basically spiritual adultery. Yeah. So Israel was trying to claim that Yahweh was their God, but at the same time, they were worshiping a opposition God, you might say, a pagan God, but an opposition to the God of Israel. So, because they continued to do that, then Micah goes on now to say what's going to happen. Verse 10. Tell it not in Gath, weep not at all, in Beth Ephrath, roll yourself in the dust. Pass by in naked shame, you inhabitant of Shaphir, the inhabitant of Zanon does not go out. Beth Ezel mourns. Its place to stand is taken away from you. For the inhabitant of Moroth pined for good, but disaster came down from the Lord to the gate of Jerusalem. So basically, if we trace out who these various places are, Gath is the very first one. Gath is actually was a Philistine city at that time that the prophecy was made. So these are not even Israelites, okay? But prophecy says, tell it to Gath. Then Beth Ephrah is a Philistine city as well. It's actually in Gaza, where Gath was sort of south of where Gaza is today. But it's a Philistine city. So Yahweh is saying that they should not exalt themselves. After all, these people had nothing to do with this. These cities, Gath and Beth Raphah, they're non-Hebrew cities. And so what Micah is saying, you people in those cities, you don't have to worry about the destruction. It's not going to come upon you because I'm not dealing with you anyway. You're not a Hebrew. I'm not dealing with you. He's dealing with specifically with Israel. And therefore, he goes on and begins to show that he is going to punish Israel for these things, not these Philistine cities. And we'll see this as we go on. In the Septuagint, in regards to where it says, Beth Ephrah, roll yourself in the dust. The Septuagint implies that they should sprinkle dust on their heads instead of laughing at these people. So he's you got the Philistines over there, and they're saying, look at all this damage that's happening to Israel. And they're all what? Happy, right? And God is saying, you shouldn't be laughing about this. You shouldn't be proud of this, because I could do the same thing to you. But only because I'm not dealing with you, I'm only concerned about Israel, you're not falling under the same thing, because the people of Gath and these Philistines, they had numerous gods as well. So God is saying, don't laugh. You should actually be rolling in dust, thankful that I'm not bringing this down upon you. Okay, so going on down then to verse 13. O inhabitant of Lachish, harness the chariot to swift deeds. She was the beginning of the sin to the daughter of Zion. And we'll get to that here in a second. For the transgressions of Israel were found in you, in Lachish. Therefore, you shall give presents to Moresheth Gath. The houses of Azkev shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. I will yet bring an heir to you, O inhabitant of Marishath. The glory of Israel shall come to Adullam. Make yourself bald and cut off your hair because of the precious children. Enlarge your baldness like an eagle, for they shall go from you into captivity. Well, there again, if you read that thing and you're just reading, I'm just reading my Bible. How much sense did that make to you? Zero. Zero. So, I'd rather read the Bible one time and read it good than 100 times and miss everything. So, but let's go into this and we'll see what this is all about. Okay, so Lachish is a city south of Jerusalem, which formerly belonged to the Amorites and was the source of the pagan culture that infiltrated Judea. And so that's why it says, O inhabitant of Lachish, harness the chariot to the swift deeds. She was the beginning of the sin of the daughter of Zion. So it was out of Lachish that this pagan practices began. And they infiltrated into Judea. Moresheth Gath is an interesting term there. How does that apply? Well, you've got to go back to the beginning of the book of Micah to find out how that applies, because the beginning of the book of Micah says, the word of the Lord that came to Micah of Moresheth. Okay? So Micah is from Moresheth. And so when he goes down here to Moresheth Gath, apparently Moresheth Gath is along the Mediterranean Sea in the area of the Philistines. And it's Micah's hometown. So what he's saying to them there, therefore give presents to Moresheth Gath, because out of Moresheth Gath is coming what? Micah, the prophet, who's telling you what's getting ready to happen. So this is what he's doing. He's Micah is from Moresheth Gath, and he's the one who's telling them what's getting ready to happen to Lachish. So they should be thankful to know what's happening to them when they see it coming. All right, sort of prophecy. When we know if we can understand prophecy, and we know what's coming, then we have a little bit better footing to know how to react to it than if we would not have had if we had not studied into this. Okay, so then it talks about Akzib. I can't even pronounce these things. Akzib. Akzib is a town located in southwest Judea. There, again, along the the Mediterranean Sea. But akzib is also the Hebrew word for deceitful. So he's probably not talking about a city. He's actually talking about the deceit. The houses of deceit shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. And what did happen to a lot of the kings of Israel? They were deceived by their prophets. One of those prophets was Zedekiah. I mean, one of those kings was Zedekiah. Of course, that happened much later. But Zedekiah was deceived because the prophets kept telling him what? Calamity's not going to come. Remember? Yeah. So the translation should actually be the houses of deceit shall be a lie. So, or the houses of deceitful lie to the kings of Israel. A deceitful lie to the kings of Israel would probably be a better translation of it. Okay, so basically though, these nations above, they would not be a part of the devastation because God, again, is not dealing with the non-Hebrews. He's only dealing with the Hebrew people. In verse 15 and 16, where it says, I will bring yet an heir to you, O inhabitant of Marashah, again, the town from which Micah comes from. The glory of Israel should come to Adullam. Make yourself bald and cut off your hair because of your precious children. Enlarge your baldness like an eagle, for they shall go from you into captivity. Well, the word heir there is the word yaresh, which actually means to seize, to occupy, or to impoverish. So it was a pretty bad translation to say heir there. Let's see. Yeah, verse 15. I will bring you, not an heir, I will bring you impoverishment or occupation. Or conqueror. Yeah, conqueror would be a good. Heir certainly doesn't fit there. I don't even see how they got heir out of the word there, but out of the word yaresh. And then when it says, because of your, enlarge your baldness like an eagle, or verse 16, make yourself bald and cut off your hair because of your precious children. What does baldness imply? Okay, well, cutting off your hair. Mourning. And this is why Elisha, if you go to 2 Kings 2, chapter 2, verse 23, when you see the story of the bears and the little children attacking the little children, and the children are calling Elisha what?
Baldy.
Okay. It wasn't because Elisha was bald. It was because Elisha was mourning the death of Elijah. Okay. So he when people die, you mourn for them. And this was the sign of mourning, was to cut off your hair. And this is one of the reasons why we know that Elijah died. So... he's telling these people, you need to mourn because your cities are getting ready to be destroyed. And just be warned. Yes,
Jason. Is there somewhere in the Levitical thing that says that you should not shave your head for the dead?
It says don't cut your beard.
On the beard?
But basically it says to don't make markings in your beard. It's sort of like putting the Nike sign and cutting it into your beard. You've seen people do stuff like that. It's all signs and stuff that people do to try to make it to where people know they belong to this cult or that or that. Or the Nike cult. Yeah, how many of you got Nike shoes on, by the way? And so Nathan's laying low right there right now. Because I bet you if we go to what do you call it?
Pickleball
thing. They're all going to be Nike shoes. There's nine pairs of them, right?
Skechers.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes.
I had a thought about this word heir.
Uh-huh.
Yet will I bring sort of your inheritance, your inheritance to you. You're going to inherit these things and, make you bald because you're fixing to catch it.
Well, I'm just using what the Hebrew word means.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The Hebrew word doesn't imply heir at all. So sometimes these things, I mean, I think people translate words based on what they hope that they, you know, that they would be, to their best understanding. But, you know, the words are the words. So. Okay, so verse 8, we're not getting along too fast. Oh, yeah, I skipped over two pages. Okay. All right, now we're down to Micah 2 then. Okay. Woe to those, this is chapter 2, verse 1. Woe to those who devise iniquity and work out evil on their beds. At morning light they practice it because it is the power of their hand. They covet fields and take them by violence. Who did that? Ahab, Jezebel. Okay. Also houses and seize them. So they oppress a man in his house, a man in his inheritance. Therefore, thus says Yahweh, behold, against this family I am devising disaster, from which you cannot remove their necks, nor shall you walk heartily, for this is an evil time. So again, this is specifically about Ahab and Jezebel. We find that in 1 Kings chapter 21. And so he's talking about northern tribes, right? Okay, northern tribes, because Ahab was king of the northern tribes. And he says it's going to be an evil time. And the way that's translated, it actually means not a good time. Okay? The word is tov. And so it's a not a good time. It's a low tov, you might say. No tov, no good. No good day. Okay, no good time. Micah 2, verse 4. In that day, what does that phrase mean? At the end time, okay? Or basically going to be the end time for these people. In that day, one shall take a proverb against you and lament with a bitter lamentation, saying, we are utterly destroyed. He has changed the heritage of my people. How he has removed it from me to a turncoat. He has divided our fields. Therefore, you will have no one to determine boundaries by lot in the assembly of Yahweh. Okay, so in that day, it's an indication of the coming disaster. Oftentimes in prophecy, this will apply to the end of times which are yet to come, or the birth pains of the Messiah, which is the term that's often used in Scripture as well, or is basically alluded to. God calls it by various things, but that all has to do with a woman being in trouble time during childbirth. Okay. And he says, in that day, the people will blame Yahweh for what's going on. That's sort of natural, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's God's problem. God, why are you doing that to me? I'm such a good guy. And yeah, it's an act of God. Yeah, yeah. This hurricane came because, all right. So the people will blame God. So, and in regards to that, it's, you know, it's the same God that gave them the land is indeed going to begin to take it back from them. And this is what it's all about when he's talking about there's not going to be anyone to divide the fields, you know, there will be no longer any boundaries, tribal boundaries or inheritance boundaries, because it's going to be gone anyway. It's not that the land is gone, but that he's going to take the people out of the land, and therefore they will not have a heritage there anymore. Verse 6, Do not prattle. You say to those who prophesy, so they shall not prophesy. Let me reread that. Do not prattle, you say to those who prophesy, so they shall not prophesy to you. They shall not return insult for insult. You who are named the house of Jacob, is the spirit of the Lord restricted? Are these things, are these his doings? Do not my words do good to him who walks uprightly? So God is sort of asking some rhetorical questions here. And we'll see that it's as we go here. The word prattle is the same word as the word for prophecy there. Do not prophesy. And the word there is nataf, which means to drop, to preach, or to prophesy. So basically what they're saying there, what the Hebrews are answering to God, is that don't say all this stuff because we don't like people who don't tell us good things. Okay? If we've got a preacher, we want the preacher to tell us how good we are, not how bad we are. Okay? And so you're out there and you're prophesying bad things. And again, you go back to the time of the latter kings of Judah, Jehoiakim, just before, right after Josiah, forget what the one was before that, and then Zedekiah. They didn't want to hear the bad. So what did the prophets do?
Lied.
They prophesied good things, yeah. What do you want to hear? I can say that. Yeah. So, you know, it's sort of like when we went to, I've told the story before and I'll tell it again. We went to Costa Rica one year during the it was Costa Rica. And we were there during the Days of Unleavened Bread. And all they had there to eat was bread and something that looked like meat. And, of course, didn't know what kind of meat was. And so I asked one of the guys who was there serving on the line, and I said, "What's that?" And he says, "What do you want it to be?" So this is what they're asking for there. You know, what do you want me to say? I'll say it, you know. So
what's this? At all during the time of Jeremiah the prophet? Because it sounds so much like him. You know, because people are prophesying all kind of weird stuff, and he's in the muck pit because he's telling the king the truth.
Yeah. Now, Jeremiah is the next slide down.
Okay.
Now, there's no other slides on the slideshow. But, now, Jeremiah was 200 years later. So, the northern tribes were taken out around 712 B.C., and the southern tribes were taken out around 550 B.C., so 150 years difference there. Okay, so the people didn't want them to preach things that didn't sound good to them. But anyway, God still did those things, even though the prophets, you know, the prophets had no control over this stuff. Do not God's people know that he can accomplish anything? It doesn't really matter what the prophets say.
That's right.
Okay? He can do whatever he wants. And this is there again in Micah, latter part of verse 7. Do not my words do good to him who walks uprightly? God will do whatever he wants. But if you're walking uprightly, you will probably escape at least part of what's getting ready to happen to these people. All right, so going down then to verse 8. 8. Lately my people have risen up as an enemy. You pull off the robe from the garment from those who trust you as they pass by. Like men returned from war, the women of my people are cast out from their present pleasant houses. From their children you have taken away my glory forever. So God is telling them, you know, the reason I'm doing this thing is because of what you're doing. And some of the things they're doing is stealing from strangers who are just passing through. What does God say in the Torah about how to deal with strangers? It says you are supposed to invite the stranger. Take care of the strangers when they're in your land. Okay? Especially if they're just passing through. They're not causing any threat to you. So just deal kindly with them. But this implies they were doing this even to soldiers returning from war. They were stealing from the soldiers and harassing soldiers who were returning from war. And what else they were doing, they were casting the women out of their houses. Okay, so you've got a married man and a woman. He casts the woman out of the house. And who is the one who takes care of the children most of the time? It's the women. And so you cast the women out of the house. Are they going to learn about the God of Israel?
No.
Well, for most fathers, they would not, okay? So he's saying, you're casting the ones that are going to teach about my glory. Mm-hmm. And so the children are going to lose all understanding of my glory forever. Mm-hmm. because you've kicked the women out of the houses. Okay, down to verse 10. Arise and depart, for this is not your rest. Because it is defiled, I shall destroy, yes, with utter destruction. If a man should walk in a false spirit and speak in a lie, saying, I will prophesy to you of wine and drink, even he would be a prattler or a prophet of his own people, or of this people. I will surely assemble all of you, O Jacob. I will surely, well, let me see, I don't want to get to that point first. All right, so what this is continuing on there. He's saying, you know, my people are going to be destroyed. And if you walk in a lie, then you can't make it right. You can't turn a lie around like this. I will prophesy to you of wine and drink. In other words, I'm going to prophesy to you of good times, not bad times. We're all going to have a party, wine, drink, you know. So we're all going to have a party. But this is not what God is telling the prophets to say. So, you know, God's upset with the prophets, too, in a lot of this as well. Okay, so now this is where it sort of changes here. Verse 12. I will surely assemble all of you, O Jacob. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I would put them together like the sheep of a fold, like a flock in the midst of their pasture. They shall make a loud noise because of so many people. The one who breaks open will come up before them. They will break out, pass through the gate, and go out by it. Their king will pass before them with the Lord at their head. Okay, so what does that mean? Nobody?
The Lord
will lead them out. Okay. Right here, it says, arise and depart, for this is not your rest. Okay, the word there for rest is manuka. I talked about manuka today in our Torah study. Okay, it's not a time for rest for the people of Israel and Judah right there. It's not going to be a time for rest. And it's not going to be peace. Okay, it's going to be a bad thing. And there's not, you know, you can prophesy good times all you want, but it is not going to take place. But when you jump down to verse 12, now God is beginning to prophesy good things. Because Micah has now shifted gears, and he's talking about good things. And what he's talking about is something that how do I start this off? He's talking about the remnant of Israel coming out. This story of Micah here, it's mentioned in Matthew 11, verse 12 and 13. So let's go to Matthew 11, verse 12 and 13 real quick. Matthew is the first book of the New Testament. Matthew 11, verse 12 and 13. Okay, it says, from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. Okay. Does anybody know what that's about? Nathan? Okay, what this is here in Micah, Micah is basically describing a sheep pen. And in a sheep pen, back in those days, you know, their sheep would be out. They would be out in the field. They didn't take them home every night. But they would build a little pen around the sheep. And this is how they would keep them sort of corralled at night. But they're corralled, and there's a lot of them in there, and they're sort of restless. And so they all want to get out. And so when when the shepherd in the morning, he gets ready to let them out. If he opens up a little narrow opening for them to go out one by one, once they start going out, they don't go out one by one, because they now start all pushing to get out, and so they break down the fences. So even though they started out just one at a time, now they're going out two, and then five, and then 15, and they break down the fences completely, and they make a breach. And the Hebrew word for breach is Perez. And so that's the words that are used here in this passage here. A breach is being made. Yes.
Now, when you say Perez, that's also, if we go back to Judah, when Matthias
right.
was given birth, that's where that name came, because he breached through first.
Exactly. So this is what it's a breaking forth. Okay, breaking out. And what this is all about is John the Baptist. Okay, because Yeshua is asking, they're asking about John the Baptist. And if you remember the story of the Transfiguration, the disciples, Peter, James, and John, were at the Transfiguration. They were in a vision, and the vision clearly states it was a vision. And in a vision, who do they see? Elijah and Moses. Elijah is the friend of the bridegroom, according to Jewish tradition. In fact, Yeshua actually calls him that. And Moses is the friend of the bride, because Israel was called to be the bride of God, right? He married on Mount Sinai, God married Israel. And so Israel is the woman, and God is the man, because he's called a father. He's always referred to as a male. And Av means father, and it's hard to be. Well, today you could have a female father. But back then, there was only one way you could be a father, and that had to be a man. So what this is about is that they see in this vision Moses and Elijah coming together. Friend of the bride, friend of the bridegroom, and they're coming together. And what's the thing that brings them together is Yeshua. And so he's in the center of all this. And so in that transfiguration thing, after the disciples woke back up out of the vision, they ask Yeshua, you know, what does all this mean? And he says, this is about John the Baptist. John the Baptist is the one who is going to basically be the one who brings about he's opening up the pathway for the kingdom to come. But in the Jewish understanding, and see, we don't understand this if we are not in a little bit of a Jewish understanding, but in the Jewish understanding, in order to have the kingdom of God, can you have the kingdom of God with just Judah? You also have to have the northern tribes. And so what they understand this now to mean, and this is the message that Yeshua is trying to get across to the disciples, is that you've got to bring in the northern tribes. You guys are the ones who are going to bring the northern tribes in. And by making this reference to the breaker here, he's saying, and they're ready to break out right now. So this is how we know that in the first century, the focus of the disciples was the northern tribes. It's through this prophecy that we can understand that. So
that gives understanding to me of chapter 2, verse 12. I will surely assemble, O Jacob, all of you. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. Mm-hmm. I will put them together as the sheep of Bozrah. Mm-hmm. As the flock in the midst of their fold, because I wasn't understanding what we were saying about the sheep in the middle of that, but and shall make a great noise by reason of the multitude of men.
Yep.
So that gives me a lot more understanding on
yep.
why we brought up the sheep of Bozrah
yep.
in the middle of there.
And so you can go on into Malachi chapter 4, verse 2. If you read it in the Septuagint, it makes a lot more sense. But it says in Malachi 4:2, go forth and bound as young calves let loose from bonds. And this is talking about the people of Israel. So this is one of the reasons we wanted to get into Micah, because Micah has all of these little things that show us what's going to happen, and it's going to happen with Israel. And so the church has missed most of this stuff. But we can see this when we understand the prophecies, and if we take the time to go back and study the prophecies. Now, I have to give you a hint. I wrote about this about 10 years ago. And I gave a message called, I gave a three-part series on John the Baptist. And this was the third of those three-part series that covers this one thing in deep detail. So anyway, these are all good prophecies. And there's a lot more of it as we go on. But we'll see this, continue to see this pattern between Israel, the prophecies of doom, but then the prophecies of Israel being gathered together again and being restored. So, questions? Malachi 4.
Then you take verse 13 of chapter 2. The breaker is come up before them, which you're talking about. They have broken up and passed through the gate and are gone out by it. And their king shall pass before them and Yahovah on the head of them. So that's all tying in. That's really cool.
Yeshua is the breaker.
Yeah.
He's the one who opens the gate. Uh-huh. But then the northern tribes are going to push through. So we've seen the gate opened.
Yeah.
We're here because that gate's open.
Yeah.
But it hasn't pushed through yet, at least in our day, but back then it did. Back then it did. And this is why we were talking a little bit about it today, but I didn't bring this up. But when you go in the book of Romans is all about the Jews having to deal with the Israelites who are pushing their way into the synagogue. And the Jews don't like it. And they would be the same way today. If you try to go to a Messianic synagogue today as a non-Jew, you will see that you are a second-class person in a Messianic synagogue. Because they don't. If you call yourself Israel, they'll probably kick you out. So it's happening today. We're beginning to break out again, but it's going to explode as time goes on. And I'm out of time. So, but we'll get into chapter 3 next time. So we did get two chapters going. So, all right. Any other questions? All righty.